food is big when you're an open mic. That's the fucking cherry on top.
Yeah.
You care about the food more than the
when you hear sometimes. That?
Yeah.
When they go, then we got food, you're like,
yeah, we got a free dinner.
All right, fuck the comedy, I'll come down.
Oh, fuck, yeah. We got dinner. Yeah, you can get a steak if you want.
Yeah.
Most people get the shrimp, and you're like, your head's about to blow. I haven't seen shrimp in years. Let's start this fucking
thing.
Fuck
yeah.
Whenever you're ready, buddy.
Let's do it. It's Monday, the 17th of June. What the fuck are you doing with your goddamn life? Anyway, the church is brought to you by Onnit. Listen, when it comes to supplements, nobody takes care of you like Onnit. Alpha Brain for starters. And if it doesn't work for you, if you don't feel more focused, if you don't feel more energetic, we'll give you your money back and we don't even want the product. You know what I'm saying? Who the fuck does that? When you go to your fucking Chinese restaurant, you don't like the egg foo young. They give it back to you if you eat it. Fuck no, you get dick. But Onnit believes in their product 150%. That's why I go to Onnit right now. I can't help you with the club bells or the kettlebells, but supplements, I got you. Press in.
Church.
Bam! C-H-U-R-C-H. And I'll get you 10% off delivered to your house. Also, I don't know if you looked out the fucking window lately, wherever the fuck you live, unless you live in Antarctica, you got an excuse. It's summertime. And what does summertime mean? That your asshole is going to stink and your nutsack's going to sweat and you can't get your dick sucked because it smells like a dead fucking body. That's why. But that comes to an end today. You know why? Because Uncle Joey got something for you. HelloTushy.com. Portable bidets. You put right on, snap on. It takes 10 minutes. It's the outside line. It's the same water as your plumbing, so you're not using toilet water. Let me tell you something. You don't know what. You ever take a good fucking shit and you go, God damn, it feels good to be a gangster. Now think if you didn't have to use toilet paper. All you had to do was press a button and a little water hits your ass and it takes off that bacteria and all that dead shit that's surrounding your asshole that gets you sick, obviously. Later on in life when your asshole bust open, it's because you've been using that fucking rainforest disgusting fucking tree paper, which God knows. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, go to HelloTushy.com. They got portable bidets, snap right on, 60-day money-back guarantee, and you're going to fucking love them. They start at $69. Go to HelloTushy.com right now and press in.
Church.
Bam! And get, I don't know what, 10% delivered right to your fucking house. You could snap it in. 60-day guarantee. You're going to love the bidets.
I got one for my dad for Father's Day.
There you go. This is what I'm fucking talking about. If you listen, you got to look at your father and say, what does this asshole stink like? You ever look at your father and your mother and go, I can't even imagine what my mother's asshole stinks like under that fucking house dress she's had on for a week. Hello, Tushy is the way to go. Kick this motherfucking muley. We're not fucking around. You understand me? It's the church of what's happening now. Put away the violins and the stories and the excuses. We're going deep, bitch, into the murky waters with motherfucking Metallica. Here you go. Are you fucking kidding me? Get that syringe ready. We'll shoot heroin today, motherfucker. Are you fucking kidding me? Andrew Santino.
Yeah, baby.
The Christ Killer. And your Uncle Joey, baby.
Hey, hey, I'm your life. I'm the one who takes you there. Hey, hey, I'm your life. I'm the one who cares. Stay, hey, betray. I'm your only true friend.
What are you, fucking nuts? Monday God morning, damn. Taking you right to the fucking heart. How are you, Mr. Santino?
Good, brother. That's so fucking... That's what a way to start the show,
that's
huh?
That's it. We don't
God
fuck
damn,
around.
Damn, Metallica,
takes,
though.
You, pushes your heart to the next limit. What's going on in your world?
Nothing, brother. I'm good. I just got back from Connecticut, you know? Moving along.
Bridgeport, the motherfucking highlight capital.
Yeah, bitch, yeah. That's where people die. That's where people die on purpose. Not on accident. That's where people die on purpose. I was about to fucking end it there. Right by the water. They built a brand new oyster house And across the street from the, or across the water from the Oyster House, power plant. I was like, brand new, and they got the ugliest fucking view in the bay of a power plant. And they're selling, you know, they're trying to sell all this space, condos, all this shit. Shout out Bridgeport. Thanks for coming out to the shows. It was good. We had a good time. Just, you know, I was like, this city is fucking no joke. It looks like, you know what it looks like? It feels like everybody cleared out, you know? Like they just went somewhere else. Like they built up this little downtown and no one came. It's like if you build it, they'll come. They didn't fucking come.
They didn't show up.
Nobody showed up.
You know, these cities are trying to lure you back. My wife called. Last night we talked for a little while. She went back to visit her family in Tennessee.
Oof.
And she was telling me, she goes, my mom and dad told me they're about to sell the house and move where there's civilization.
Where there's humans, yeah.
Where there's humans again. You know, there's nothing going on in her town.
What part of Tennessee? Do you know the name?
It's by Milan.
Mm.
It's by Milan and Dyer and I forget the name. What the fuck? It's on the tip of my tongue. But she said she took my daughter and her cousins to this other town, to a fucking rodeo.
Mm.
And she goes, you know, all the kids I grew up with and all their families, they disappeared because the area is dried off.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do. You know, they've taken out all these significant little places that employed, you know, 500,000 people and gave this town daylight, you know,
right.
Whether it's Fisher Price Toys or whatever the fuck it is, you know. And now you have these cities where Google's moving in and all these big companies are moving in, and there's, you know, Reno is on the up, you know, all these little, Columbus, Ohio's on the up, all these places. My niece dates a guy outside of Indianapolis that they just, like a big chain, opened up a restaurant there.
In Indianapolis?
Somewhere outside of Indianapolis. She lands in Indianapolis and drives an hour and a half.
There's so many headquarters out there now.
And she goes, there's nothing out there.
Yeah. Until a big company comes in.
So they're hoping for Starbucks. And
fuck yeah. Google, Target, Amazon, all that
you
shit.
You know, Walmart, all those places. And they'll be there eventually.
Yeah.
Because people are leaving the big cities. You're not getting the back. When you're intelligent, and because we all have a fucking economic awakening.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I'm paying this. I'm doing this. I'm doing this. And what do I get from it? Sunshine. When you go to anywhere outside of L.A., the only thing we miss is sunshine.
Yeah, that's it.
You go, wow, I could use some fucking sun today.
Yeah.
Like, we become addicted to the sunlight. Like, wow. You know, you go to these cities on the weekends, there's no sun.
No.
3 days, there's no fucking sun. When it comes out, people come out just to hang by a building and shit like that. So, eventually, everybody one day goes, what the fuck am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
And they go to a neighborhood that suits them. You know, last year when I went to Columbus, I noticed that the shows were a little bit more packed than usual.
Yeah.
And I noticed that I saw a lot of Yankee hats. I'm like, why don't I have any fucking Yankee hats? And then I went to the Kickbox one day and I saw a New York style sandwich place and a New York style hot dog place. And a couple months later, I'm home and there it is in the New York Times. The city where New Yorkers are escaping to by the 30,000 a month.
Damn.
They're going to Columbus or...
Why Columbus? What do you think it is? It's just nicer and cheaper and more livable.
You look at your paycheck it's more and livable. You go, what the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, when I was in New York shooting a movie, I would go over to New Jersey at night. And people come up to me on the ferry and go, hey, I listen to the podcast. Nice to meet you. And I would talk to them. And
there was
this one guy that said, by me living in Jersey and working where I work and the tax, he goes, I take a $30,000 tax. I don't know what exactly he was talking about. I don't understand that. But he goes, if I lived in New York, my paycheck would be that much smaller by me taking this ferry. Even though I have to take the ferry at 18 a whack, 9 each way.
Jesus.
I still save money on taxes.
Yeah, because living in the city's unbelievable, man.
And the other side of it is, because you were saying like they wait for big companies. The other side of it is that a lot of people are paying their workers to work from home. So you could work anywhere for a lot of these companies. Why not move to Ohio or anywhere?
If you don't need to be there. Also, people want to escape some shit. If they're in a place where they're like, they don't like the environment anymore. Like, did you see the preacher in Knoxville? Did you see about this preacher in Knoxville?
That bought a plane?
Nah. That's funny as shit. That was a funny interview. No, this preacher in Knoxville is going on the other day. Leviticus 22 about like killing gays. Like he's like, we got it. Dude, this guy was like a
he's the chief of police. Chief of police.
And he's on there being like, killed. The Bible says these hot sodomites need to be murdered. I mean, he's like preaching murder. And this guy's the head of the cops, bro. In Knoxville? Is that where it was?
Somewhere like that. Let me look it up.
Yeah. Preaching murder to his church. And he's like, you don't like it? Get out. I was like, this motherfucker is serious about this hate. I mean, that's not like say some foul shit at the house to somebody. Like, you know, I'm not really a fan of fucking Puerto Ricans. No, this is guy, he's on the stand screaming at a church full of people. Being like, these homos need to get taken down where they live. Go to the parade. Take them all out at the parade. This motherfucker's crazy.
There's some place in this country, it's still 1970.
I know, dude. This motherfucker was nuts. And
some people like that.
Oh, well, listen, there was enough people there that were loving it.
Some people like that.
They were cheering it on.
Knoxville, yeah.
Knoxville, yeah.
Some people, you know, there's parts in this country where you got to be real fucking careful.
Damn. Man. Knoxville is... University of Tennessee is in Knoxville. Yeah. Massive college, man.
Great, great comedy town.
Yeah, man.
I haven't been there in 20 years. Music shop, that was tremendous. I bought a Soundgarden album there that I never had before. Just a great city, but they just...
Behind. Something's like behind, that. Man.
Where are you from originally?
Chicago.
What made you leave?
Comedy.
Comedy.
Anything I wanted else? So bad. I mean, well, nobody leaves. No one leaves. None of my whole family's in Chicago. Nobody leaves. And I really badly wanted to get into the world of comedy so bad. I wanted to either write it or perform it. I didn't know what I was going to do. But I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. And I knew if I went to New York, it'd be too close to home. You know what I mean? It'd be like, I could just bounce back to Chicago. It's not that far. And I wanted to come to California because as a kid, you're fascinated with California. You know, it's like, you see all these movies as a kid and California has this allure to it. And I badly wanted to get out to California, but I couldn't afford to go to school out here or anything like that. So I slowly bounced my way west. I was in Arizona first, and then I came out here because that's all I wanted, man. That's the only thing I gave a shit about was like, this is where the thing is that I can get comedy done.
Let me ask you a question. Coming from Chicago.
Yeah.
A very artsy, fartsy city.
Mm-hmm.
Great art city.
Yeah.
You know, great community. One of the kids I did the movie with said, I'm from Jersey. I went to Chicago because I had a girlfriend. And I ended up staying because the art community was so strong there. Whether I do spoken word or music or
right.
stand up, he was like, it's so tight. And I still remember going to Second City.
Yeah.
One of the producers out here for CAA that produced the movie I was in is from Chicago. And he goes, if you're ever in Chicago, look me up. And I looked him up. I went to his office, and his office is in the building at Second City.
Right.
Is it Second City?
Second City, yeah.
And then down the corner is one of the Zanies.
Zanies on, yeah, Old Town, on Wells. Yep.
Zanies is...
It's literally a block away.
A block away.
Yeah.
I remember him taking me and showing me, and I'm like, that's fucking remarkable, you mm-hmm. know, like... And Ramis was living there in all those movies in the 80s, 16 Candles.
Right.
And I think Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, all those movies...
John Hughes, man.
It was just something that... It's accepted there. How was your family and friends towards the arts? Were they open-minded?
Well, you know.
Right, that's what, all right. You just fucking said it. You just said it.
You know, like every time I go home, it's like, how's Hollywood, big shot, you know, with all those homos in Hollywood? You know, you're a queer because you came out here. That's what it is. Like
you sucking dick.
Yeah, you sucking dick out there in Hollywood. You sucking dick by the beach and rollerblades. Immediately, it's all this, like, they shit on the idea of this thing. And look, people say that all the time. Comedy in Chicago is incredible. It's an amazing scene.
You could stay there.
Could have stayed.
You could stay.
Yeah.
Never leave.
No.
Make a living.
But I thought, I don't want to be home. I want to take a shot. I wanted to take a shot. And I wanted to do it all by myself. So I didn't ask for money or nothing from my family. And I said, I'm going to go do this thing on my own and see if I can do this.
Where'd you go to school at?
Arizona State.
Yeah. Tempe.
Tempe, baby.
So you went down there.
Went down there for a couple of years, had some fun.
And you stand up down there at all?
A little bit. But back then, man, the Improv was the only club. Now they got fucking 8 clubs in Phoenix. It was only the Improv. And I used to hook up with a girl who worked there for a little bit. And she would sneak me in so I could see shows. I saw Hedberg's last West Coast show before he went back and then he passed away. I saw that. I saw Geraldo. I saw a lot of guys that I was like infatuated with. I mean, that was my way in terms of like being a fan of comedy. I always was, but I wanted to do it. I was scared. And then in school, I did a little bit of open mic. I did theater. I did all sorts of shit to try to get myself on stage to get more comfortable with doing comedy. But I didn't really dig my feet into doing stand-up until I got here, because there was the opportunity here was so rich, you know? Arizona wasn't like that. Arizona was a couple. There was like one or two rooms that people could go back of bars. But, you know, that the political circuit was so heavy, it was hard to crack as a young college kid. Out here, it was like we're all in the same boat. You know, so I knew I could, if I got to LA, opportunities would be more rich. And that college roommates of mine were California kids. And a buddy of mine said, I got a place in Long Beach, we can stay. Because I had barely any fucking money. And he said, I got a place in Long Beach. So I loaded up a U-Haul, moved to Long Beach, man. Slept on a guy's lazy boy for a long fucking time. But the recline is nice when you're ready to pass out. I got to tell you, man.
What type of major did you get?
Journalism. Journalism and English was my minor.
No theater, nothing like that?
No, I did plays. I didn't have a theater major, though. I didn't want because, you know, still in the back of my head, I was like, I got to have, like, a thing to fall back on. Something, you know, like something in the journalistic, radio arts, publishing. Something I could just grab a job if I needed it. Because I was scared, you know, like, I don't come from a lot of money. My parents aren't people that are like, we'll give you money, figure out your dreams. That's not how I grew up. So, like, my parents are supportive in the sense of, go do your thing, live your shit, good luck. But you're a man. So if you fail, fucking, it's not on us. You know what I mean?
Brothers and sisters?
One little sister.
What's she doing?
She's living in Chicago, living the dream, you know, doing the thing that, like, I wish I had that opportunity to be young in Chicago like she is. She's 26, 27. But I wanted this so bad. I wanted to be out here in the thing, you know? But I do, there is pieces of me that miss not having that Chicago youth growing up and like being in your mid-20s in downtown Chicago. It's one of the best cities in the world, man. It's just like New York. It's the same shit. It's like endless shit to do, endless people to meet, endless things to see. You know what I mean? You can keep consuming in cities like that. And LA wasn't like that. You know, LA was like work, 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 work. And now I'm getting to enjoy the fruits of my labor in my mid-30s. I worked like a dog, you know, until and now it's like, now I get to have some fucking fun.
How many
fun.
Years were you? Are you? Have you been here?
Yeah, it's 13. 13 on the 4th of July.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's, you know, started from the gut bottom. And we were talking about doing shows down in Orange County and shit. I had some paralytic shows down there, some terrible, thought I was going to quit. Shit was terrible, man. Some shows so bad where I was like, I can't do comedy. Four people in like a fish house in fucking Tustin. It's like, this is how I quit or die. I mean, you know, getting to doing, what were those shows called? Tribble runs. Did you ever do those?
Oh, please.
Oh, yeah, man. Doing those. I got two tickets in one trip. The trip going to do comedy in Montana cost me $380.
Oh, yeah.
I cried on the side of the fuck. I never cry. I'm not a tough guy. I never really learned how to cry. I never really was a cry guy.
380 when you're getting 275 for the week.
Bawling. I'm outside of the fucking car losing my mind. I thought I was going to fucking end it there in the middle of Missoula, Montana. I was losing my shit. I was so sad. I was so broken up. I lost money. I had to call my fucking girlfriend. I was like, I'm fucked. I don't even know how I was going to get home. I was fucked. So if I go to, I do this gig, the second gig, I do this second gig and I end up passing out. I'm doing whippets with locals at a pool hall. A fight broke out. I woke up under a pool table. Bad news, man. Ended up crying in this fucking hotel room. Like, all it was hitting me. Like, loads and loads of emotion were hitting me because I thought, this is how everything goes. Shit, I was by myself. Outside of my hotel room was a Pepsi machine. You open the motel blinds and the Pepsi machine was so loud. I couldn't sleep at night. I was like, this is it. This is why people fucking get sad over comedy. This is exactly why. I'm out $175. A fight broke out at a pool hall. I hit my head on the pool table doing whippets. I was like, this is close
fucking
to
whippets.
Whippets, bro. Whippets.
Just, it never ends.
I know.
That's the thing about the, and you know, for people at home listening, let's say, what were your options?
Yeah.
You know what your options were? For your Uncle Louie to call you.
Yeah.
And say, I got a job for you. You've always been good at carpentry. You want to be a carpenter, don't you? You're like, yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
All right, I got you a job as a union laborer.
Right.
downtown Chicago. They're building a new forum down there. You got your work for 2 years. So why you go there? Nobody gives you a fucking hammer.
Mm-mm.
They give you a shovel. And they give you a garbage bag, and
right.
you're just picking up. And every once in a while, somebody will go, "Hey, come here, hold this piece of 2x4 while I nail it in and shit like this." You know, so for 2 years, what are you doing?
Yeah,
you know, the only difference is you're making money.
Yeah, you're making a living.
Union laborer, you're right. making a living, but you still got to buy work boots, and you still got to buy jeans, and
right.
you know, a scaffold could fall, and then you got to consider the biggest thing in life in Chicago, the winter. You know,
the
you're
worst.
Out there picking up fucking paper with gloves on and a hooded sweatshirt.
Yeah,
and fucking
freezing.
So no matter what you decide to do in life, whether you're a dentist or that, you always have that, those moments which you go, wow, why would I keep doing this?
Yeah.
Why yeah. the fuck would I keep doing this?
Yeah.
This guy keeps throwing bricks from the third floor on my fucking head.
Yeah.
I got to walk around with a hard hat. It's dirty below. You know, the carpenters are off, but I still got to load the job.
Right.
You know, I got to load the brick and load the fucking 90-pound rolls of tar paper up on the roof. And, you know, there's so many fucking struggles in life that you go through.
Yeah.
The best is when somebody looks you in the eye when you're young and goes, yeah, in 6 years. 6 years. It's like when you go to the Army recruiter when you're 18. You just got your dick sucked the night before by some skinny chick that was babysitting two doors down. And you're like, so what are we doing here? Okay, we take a test. And if you fucking pass, they send you to Camp Pendleton. You do jumping jacks for 8 weeks. And then they send you off. And then you do 20 years.
Yeah.
When you're 18 and somebody says 20 years to you, you're like, 20 years?
Yeah.
Go fuck you. Uh-uh. Take this feather and shove it up your eyeball or whatever the fuck. And then 20 years pass by and you're a fucking mutt. And you're like, I should have joined that fucking service.
Mm-hmm.
That was 20. And it's the same thing in life.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're a carpenter or a baker, you know, you go to bake, they make you a baker's assistant. What is that? Cleaning the bathrooms, getting the dough together, mushing it with your hands mm-hmm. and all that shit, getting it ready. You don't make the bagel. Somebody else does.
Right.
And then one day Hector doesn't come in and fucking Mario's car blew up. And guess who's the new bagel chef?
You're the new bagel
you
boy.
You are. But you've been doing it for 3 years. And you've been watching. And you've been learning. And you've been... And it's the same thing with comedy.
Yeah.
That comedy, bro, I've been doing comedy 28 years. And there's times I'm writing, like, I'm getting ready to go to the store and just looking at your jokes. And you think about, what let me know that I could even do this at the 5th year mark?
Yeah.
Because it's a beating.
Yeah, you get beat.
It's a beating every day.
You get beat so bad.
It's an abuse fest.
Yeah.
It's just, you sign up for 5 years of abuse.
Yep.
You know, going to, and it really funny when you bring one of your friends with you. Like, Lee decided to bring his mom to open mics, and she gave him a piece of her mind this week, which she really fucking thought. Because you don't see it.
No.
You don't see it. You're in love. She's sucking 20 dicks on the back door, but she comes out front and tells you she was a nun
right.
till last week, and you believe it. You don't see that. She's got sperm coming out of her mouth. And, you know, somebody came in her eyebrow. You don't see it, because... We're so in love with what we're doing.
Yeah.
That's the fucking reality check when people are like, I don't know how you do this. You got to sit there every night with these mental health fucking patients. Because that's all an open mic is.
50%
of people just got out. They got long sweaters to hide the bracelets.
Right. The cuts.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. Hide cuts. All the cuts.
Yeah. You know, it's just, and then you move up and you leave those people behind.
Yeah. You keep
move
plugging.
Up a notch and you keep moving. And all of a sudden you keep losing the crazies. All of a sudden, you lose Boom Chakalaka. You know what I'm saying? There's no more, hey, man, well, who's on this album?
Right. Buy this disc.
Boom, what the fuck are you talking about? You're in Long Beach. I'm sorry.
I was just, because you're talking about people who, like, you think of that time is so long. But I forget the number, but isn't it something like most people, normal people do, like, 7 careers? Or, like, it's like it's something crazy like that, like 4 or 5 different, totally different careers throughout their life.
A lot of people do a lot of different careers.
And you have to start over, pretty much.
We just dig into one and go over and over and over and over and over and over. Basically, it's like we're doing temp work with almost no hope that you'll get the job, right?
Right.
Comedy is like you're a temp and you got to do temp work again and again and again and again and again and again and again. Now, most temps go, I'm going to get a gig. Or I'm going to float. I'm going to keep applying to get a gig. And your thought process is, I'm probably going to get an entry-level gig at some point. That's why you temp, make money in the meantime. But we're basically temping without really much, I mean, for the majority of comics. The high majority of people that do comedy, they're never going to get the job. That's just an unfortunate fact. That's a truth. A small percentage of people get the job. If you're lucky enough to be a professional, that's because you were good. You were one of the best to temp.
And you were talking at the beginning how excited, because I'm at that point, is you're excited when you get $20 and a cheeseburger. Can you imagine if like someone, like if your sister was like, oh, I'm going to have a whole day worth of work and I get $20 and a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Like, well, no one else would do that.
No, they quit that job. It sounds like the worst job in the fucking world. But the reason that real comics are comics and forever will be is because you put in those hours because you knew you were good enough to get to the next thing. Some people, I've said it before, that I think some people have it and some people don't. And some people get it and some people won't. So some people have it and some people just don't have it. And some people get it and then others just don't. So you have to have it and get it. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you have to have the thing and you have to get the game. If you have it but you don't get it, you'll probably never fucking make it. You have to have the thing, whatever it is, that makes you a good comedian, and you have to get it. You have to get the struggle. You have to get the pain. You have to get the ups and downs. You have to get this. You have to get over the fact that it ain't fair. It's never going to be fucking fair. There's no evening of the score, and it's not going to go the way you want. You just have to get over that. Once you understand that, you get it, and you have the passion, you have the talent, all it is just then it's time. Then it's just plugging in time. Then it's like, well, I just got to go to work and go to work and go to work and go to work. A friend of mine, I won't mention her name, but we started together and she quit. And she always used to say, she was like, I fucking can't believe you're out every night. And even today, nothing changed. People that run into me on the street, this guy at breakfast, oh, I'm a big fan. When are you up in LA again? I said, dude, I'm always up. I'm up almost every fucking night. Really? Wow, shit. Oh, okay. He's thinking I'm like, yeah, I got a show in 3 weeks. I'm like, no, motherfucker, I'm up every night. Come see me. Because I won't ever turn that off. Working, that's me working. I'm working to build the things. I want to keep building. I think when you get content and you, look, you got to take time for yourself and family and, you know, and friends. You got to have some fun and be a human, but I got to work.
Comedy was for.
Yeah.
For me, that's what comedy was for. Was to go socialize with people.
Yeah.
Since I was bad at going to bars.
Right.
You're never going to see me at a party.
Yeah. 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 What's there?
And every time I go, I ask myself, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
So I don't like parties. I don't like networking.
Nobody likes fucking networking.
I'm not networking. Uh-uh. Those days ended as soon as I got here.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to your house and watch a game for 4 quarters.
Yeah.
If I show up, it's the last quarter to sit there and watch the game or the first 3 innings.
Right.
But I will show up to do comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Because everything that I need is there. I'm getting an envelope. I'm getting food. I'm getting a cocktail. There's broads. When you're 30 and you're doing comedy.
Yeah.
Think of all. I just named it to you. There's drugs there. Somebody in that comedy club's got drugs.
Always.
There's somebody who's going to suck a dick.
Mm-hmm.
You get to do your craft.
Yeah.
You either get $10 and a burrito or $50 and a dinner or whatever the fuck it is.
Right.
You're going to socialize. You're going to find out what's going on. Hey, you know what? They're looking for fucking redheads for that fucking new ABC show.
Right.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the name of the show? You wouldn't have found that out on the fucking couch.
Mm-mm.
And you're not going to find that out at a party with your cunt girlfriend. And you're not going to find that out at dinner with your fucking family. And you're not going to find out, you know, there's a part of comedy that it's fun for two or three years.
Mm-hmm.
Like the first 3 years for me, it was fun. I'd invite people to shows.
Yeah, come know, see me.
To come to bomb.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, you know, why we really want to see you. And you're like, no, you don't.
Not no, now, you
no,
don't.
You don't. Well, tonight, and then they come down and you bomb.
And they go, you were all right.
Yeah, and then there comes a time where you look at this as, this is real.
Mm.
Like, I dated a girl when I first came in. And yeah, we were like olive oil and whatever. We didn't really, there was a lot of things in between us. But one of the things that got it the most about me was, I'm in L.A. This is the NBA. This is the UFC. This is the major leagues. I already did my time in double A ball in fucking Denver and triple A ball in Seattle. And I did A ball in New York where I got abused for 9 months. You know, you get to sign up and you're number 82 on the list. And it's, you know, it's just abuse.
Yeah.
And then you get there and you're number 82, but he's got four friends that are going up before.
Right.
You know, it's just pure abuse. Your feelings. Right. And I knew I was in L.A., so guess what? I don't want to go to a restaurant with your family. You know, and her family, you know, she's from Michigan. So they would come out here like every 8 weeks. And I'm like, what are they doing here? No, seriously.
Not going to Buca de Beppo again.
I'm not doing that.
Nah.
In those days, what time is the Comedy Store open at night? What time's the first show?
7, 8.
No, first show's at 9:15, right?
I was there at 9:13.
Yeah.
Because God forbid there'd be a fallout. And I wasn't there. Okay?
Yeah.
For all you motherfuckers that don't get enough butts, get to the store at 9:15.
Yeah, get there. Well, get there early.
Get there at 9:15 and sit it out. Get a drink and talk to people.
Yeah.
And wait. Somebody will throw you up.
Yeah,
if you're worth your weight in gold, somebody will put you up in the belly, the main room, even if I had a spot at 12:30 at night.
Right.
I was there at 9:15.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Somebody calls me and says, I have a gig for you. And that's what I would do in those days. I'd do the Mexican gigs and then close it out the store following Paul Mooney.
Wow.
So I would work myself up to go follow Paul Mooney. But there was no vacations. I didn't want nobody visiting me. There was no dinners.
Nope.
Ask Josh Wolf. I was going to ask him last week. For years, every 2 or 3 weeks, he'd have a party with his family. I never made it to one. Not one, even though I lived on his couch.
Yeah.
Not one. I always had a spot to do.
Well, you're hustling.
I avoided that shit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to go to my party. I'm going to have a great time. I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-mm.
There's a spot. You know, it's like Dom Rivera and me were talking about when you play basketball, if you're not playing, the guy that you're going to go up against freshman year, he's practicing right now.
Yeah.
You got to assume that dude is practicing.
He's putting in work while you're sitting around.
He's putting in work and you're sitting talking to your dumb friends about going to India and doing comedy. Get the fuck out of here. Talk to them at the comedy club about it.
Yeah.
You're at the club. You're involved.
Yeah.
That's how, like, when I decided to get in, I got in. There was no looking back.
Right.
There was no nothing. You know what I'm saying? I still did drugs after the show.
Yeah.
After the show, you can do all the drugs.
Enjoy yourself after.
You can do all the drugs you want after the show. Before the show, you want to do a drink to calm your nerves down and maybe smoke a joint. I'm with you. Nothing else. Even though I was a junkie, nothing else went in my system.
You kept it clean the whole time.
Kept it clean. Coke was in my pocket.
Yeah, it was just ready.
I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, it was in the on deck circle.
Cocked and ready to go. Cocked and ready to go. But I didn't understand that.
Yeah.
When I moved back to Boulder in 94, it was for one mission, to do comedy every night. To do comedy every night. And there was this guy named Andy Payton. You ready for hustle?
Mm.
The Comedy Works didn't like him.
They didn't let him perform?
They didn't let him perform. They didn't like him. He was a little older.
Right.
You know, we were 20. If I was 29, 30, 31, he had to be 46.
Yeah.
Not the funniest guy in the world, but heart of gold. So what did he do? He went out every night. He went out in the daytimes instead of fucking around. He would go up and down Ventura, and he would get a Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, and some Thursdays.
Damn.
Because by Thursdays, they come in anyway.
Yeah, they got shit going on.
Nobody wants to go to a bar on Friday and hear comedy. Mm-mm. They go to the Comedy Store.
Right.
And then he went and he would get a newspaper and type a newspaper about the Denver comedy scene. Do a whole segment on you, do a whole segment on Lee, what was going on, and he would sell advertising to all those businesses that he would do the bar at. And every night. And he would lose a Monday and gain a Monday.
Right.
He was already working on a Monday. He already had
Right,
a
he already had it in the...
He already had a Monday that he kept putting him off. 3 more weeks and we'll do comedy. I'm just waiting for the equipment to come. And boom. And he would call you Monday. Hey, the Australian bar is done. We got a room now up and fucking whatever. It's an hour and a half drive. I'll give you $45 and they give you a dinner. Done.
Damn.
He was that You know, nobody wants to give me work. I'll create my own work.
You know where he is now?
He's the mayor of a, last time I checked, he was the mayor of a small town in like Wyoming.
Damn.
Like population 2,200 or something like
that. He went up north and wanted to get away from it all.
He just one day, it wasn't for him. He yeah. gave it a, he was old enough, he gave it a New York fucking shot.
And then that's it.
It wasn't for him.
Do you see yourself staying in LA forever?
No.
Where would you, where do you want to end up?
In a community.
Yeah.
In a small, decent community.
What part of the country?
Where there's no humidity.
Okay. So.
Let's narrow it down to those fucking states.
That's got it. Well, like, you know, Colorado doesn't have a lot of humidity.
Colorado, Nevada.
Nevada, yeah.
You know, shit like that.
Yeah.
But for right now, where else am I going to go?
Well, people say that. I say that all the time.
I would love to get the fuck out of here right now today.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, the acting jobs are lower. I mean, there's no auditions like they used to be. There's no, you know.
Yeah.
So in a way, you could do everything you're doing here.
Somewhere else. Yeah, I feel that. I mean, my parents are still wishing on a star that I'll buy a spot in Chicago. And we want to. I want to. Because I want to go back a lot. I want to slowly make my way back there. Chicago's a tough city to live in when it's bad, but when it's great.
Mm. You know, they're shooting things in Chicago.
Yeah, they are.
That's number one.
Shit's coming back.
They're shooting things in Chicago, which always gives you hope.
Yeah.
You know, when you live in those towns, Seattle, Chicago, Boston. Chris Evans is up in Boston shooting a movie right now.
Yeah.
You know, you could be an open micer anywhere. You know, you could be a professional comic anywhere.
Right.
I mean, Chappelle's the greatest comic in the country. He lives in fucking
Ohio.
Pennsylvania.
Yeah, some shit. Yeah, Ohio.
You know.
On a farm.
Do you guys ever think, because like the flights, like if you lived in Chicago, you're in the middle instead of having like 6-hour flights everywhere.
It's easier to get around, I'll tell you that.
It's easier to get around.
I just took a flight back from New York, and that it hits you not only money, but it kills a day. You fuck a whole day. I mean, you're done. It's not like you can't do anything else that day. You know, unless you're taking the red eye and you're waking up in New York at 4 or 5 a.m., you know, but it's like, that beats me up. That's the one thing that's just, the travel is kill. You know, like, I'm going, this weekend I'm in town, which is good, but then I go to Baltimore with Joe, Atlantic City, then I come back. Then I go back, then I come back. Then I go back to the East Coast one more time. It's like, it's tough, man, but it's got to be because I got too much going on. But this is such a hard location to go from. It just takes a lot out of you. You're like, just get the travel sucks because it's a lot of shit to do. It's a lot of shit to think about and to do. It's not mindless. If you're rich and you're flying private, it's mindless. But if you're still flying on regular planes, the airport and traveling takes it out of you. Then you get to a place and you have to learn how to turn it back on again when you're ready to do comedy, you know? You got to get there on Thursday and go, okay, fuck, let's go. I got to turn it on. I got people that paid to see me. I got to turn it on. But they don't know that that's fucking hard. They don't know it's a pain in the fucking ass. I get to the hotel and we don't have the reservation. And the credit card machine's broken. And and the car guy's late. Oh, we sent the wrong car. I mean, these things, they just happen. People don't know that that happens. It happens all the fucking time. And you just got to keep moving. But you're absorbing all that. You know what I mean? Over time, that's why when guys get older in the game, it's harder to go do shows. People want people to tour all the time. You know, like Bert right now is on that fucking world tour. I'm telling you, this is going to hit him hard when he comes back. He's going to need to crash. Because we were sitting up at the Improv, me, him, and Joe, having a drink. We were smoking a joint. And I could tell he was tired. Mentally, physically, he was fucking tired, man. And he's doing it because he loves the hustle. He's in the moment. But you can tell it takes it out of you, man. It fucks with you. It fucks with your body. It fucks with your mind. I mean, you want to talk about it. It's not healthy to sit on a fucking compressed airplane for half of your life. It's fucked up.
I could stop doing the podcast today and go on the road every week for 2 or 3 years.
You could.
I could.
Damn.
But, I couldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You know, you look at your life right now, in a couple of weeks you go on with Joe to Baltimore or whatever.
Yeah.
You get there, it's a first class ticket. You go across the country.
Oh,
you get
yeah.
lunch, dinner. But you earned that.
Mm-hmm.
You did triple runs.
Yes.
And you know what it's like to get off stage and get in the car and jump on the 8-hour drive you have.
Oh, yeah.
So you could get to the hotel. Remember, if you drive all night, then they're going to let you check in.
Right. And you call.
Yeah. So it's, you know, all these things build up to that first class ticket.
Fuck yeah.
It's not just, you have to build up. And
yes.
That's why I stress all those shit things, because then when you're, all these other things are easy. I fly easy.
Yeah, you do, huh?
As difficult as flying is, I fly easy. I give up other parts of my life to have a good time so I could fly drama-free.
Yeah.
That means clear, the Uber, the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't want any drama when I'm... I just shot a movie in New York, didn't pay enough, but I'm too old to sleep on somebody's couch.
Yeah, fuck that.
That's not gonna happen.
Fuck that.
I'm too old to sleep on somebody's floor, have somebody's kid play with me while I'm sleeping, draw crayons on my face. I gotta hear your wife making coffee. I'm too old for that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's things that you do when you first start comedy that people, you become friends with people. So the first time you go to Helium in Philly,
mm-hmm.
you become friends with the headliner and the MC. And the MC has a house, so you could stay there now. And next time you do Helium, come the week earlier because he's got a week of work for you.
Right.
You know, and that you only get, you don't get that online.
No.
You only get that by going.
Yeah.
They need to see you and you need to see them. You know, it just, that's where the traveling, and that it's hard to see when you're at a trailways waiting for a bus to come.
Oh, my
God. And they dropped you off at 4, and you got a 2-hour wait to the train station, and everything's closed.
Right.
The tuna sandwich has been in there for 3 fucking days. And you go outside the bus station, and those black guys are looking at you like a fucking pork chop. I don't know you could eat buffet.
Where you going, man? Where you going?
Where you going? Where you from? You got a lighter? You got a cigarette?
No, I don't have anything, man.
Oh, my God. So all these lessons, like this night's, the bus station is right around the corner here.
Yeah.
How many times have you driven by Greyhound over there?
A bunch, yeah. In that diner, yeah.
It's down the block from that diner.
Yeah.
You know how many nights I've been at that light and I've thought about that person at that bus station and that was me with $2 in your pocket?
Yeah.
$2. The bus is coming at 6 a.m. and it's 2 a.m., bitch. And you have a joint, you have your iPod, whatever the fuck.
Yeah,
the iMan, whatever the disc.
Discman, yeah, Walkman, yeah, you got your Walkman.
No extra batteries though.
No extra batteries.
No, you couldn't afford 2 more double A's. What are you fucking nuts?
The thing is starting to already, you know, Christina Aguilera is already starting to slow down. If you wanna be with me, baby, there's not. You know, I've been there.
Yeah,
I did all that shit.
Oh yeah.
How long is the road? Just exciting. Like, because for me, anytime I get to do anything, I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, how long until the boat starts to wear on you?
It gets exciting in different ways.
It gets exciting in different ways.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Tribble. Okay? I get a call from one night. I'm sitting around. It's 11:30. I'm getting the Coke ready to snort, and my pager goes off. And I know from the area code, it's Tribble.
Right.
So I run to a payphone. Me and my buddy run to a payphone. I call Tribble, and he gives me a Monday night. All right, a Tuesday night.
In Northern California, where was it?
It was in Boulder.
Boulder, right.
I lived in Boulder. I was the house MC. I had been fired from there now. After being a house MC for 18 months, I wasn't allowed in there, and he worked it out. The feature canceled. So he called me the night before. The feature broke down in Ogallala, Nebraska, so I don't know. So I feature, they give me a good report. I call him the next day, thank him, and he goes, I'll call you within a week to give you dates. 3 weeks went by. And he called me on a Sunday night at midnight. And he's like, hey, I'm ready to give you work. And grab a pen. You're starting in Ogden, Utah. Then you're going here. It's called the Suck My Dick Run. And then you're doing the Blind Man Run. Then you're doing they had the, what's the people in Utah? The Mormon
Run. Run, yeah.
And you have the Potato Run 1.
Right.
Potato Run 2.
Idaho.
And the other one. The one you did.
Missoula, Montana, and all that shit.
The
yeah.
8-ball in at Missoula, Montana. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you're like, so what dates are these? Are they in June? Are they in April? He's like, Tuesday.
Yeah.
You're like, what?
Yeah. Get in your fucking car now.
Get in your car now.
Yeah, now.
Like right now. You have to be in fucking Ogden, Utah, Tuesday. You have to check in at 6.
Yeah.
So I basically went home, did laundry, stayed up all night, packed, excited. I'm going on the road, my shot. I get in my car. I drive the 9 hours. I get to Utah. I tell him I'm Joe Diaz. He gives me a key. I go to my room, and there's another man in my room. I'm sharing my first road gig.
Yeah.
I got another guy in my room.
Oh, my God.
And he's anti-LA. If you go to LA, you're gay.
Right, you're gay. Everybody's
comedy,
gay.
Comedy has to be on the road. Real right. guys travel on the road.
Right, right, right.
So my first night, I'm sleeping next to this guy in a bed. His feet.
Same bed?
No, next to them.
Oh, okay.
Because they ran out of hotel rooms.
Okay.
So you're always, and then they put you in those hotels where there's a Hindu owner, and you can smell the feet throughout the whole hotel. The eggs smell like Hindu.
Everything. Curried the fuck up.
Those are the first year. If you know, you like Motel 6?
Not really, but
one
yeah.
step below.
Oh, my God.
Like one step below. Oh, yeah. The door don't lock. The air conditioner don't work. There's a mouse in your room.
Jesus.
You know, that type of shit. Yeah. Then you graduate to a higher level. You know, you keep graduating. You yeah. keep scoring. The hotel's got a jacuzzi. You're like, oh, shit. You know.
It's never going to not be exciting, man. It's different problems at every level. You know what I mean? And it's all good. Right. But, you know, you just deal with it as such. And not to sound unappreciative, but it's like you'll still love it. It'll just change the things that you love about it, right? Like, when you start selling tickets, you love the engagement with fans and you love being like, damn, I'm really getting a fan base, right? Because before, you know, you don't have a fan base. You're doing shows and you're trying and you're just working out. But then you get to have fans. Then you start to think, man, I want to start selling out instead of just selling tickets. Then you know, it keeps progressing. And you start to learn the ins and outs of all of those levels. So it's like, it'll never not be fun. Because especially if you're not having fun at all anymore, you're fucked. I mean, that's what I say. I have a tough time traveling just because I just get anxious and depressed because it's part of me a little bit. I just get low, you know, I miss home if I'm just like, I just don't want to be on this plane. But then I know I got a friend either with me or a friend I'm meeting there and I get to do fucking comedy. And the moment you get to do comedy, all that shit's gone. Comedy trumps all the issues, all the bullshit every time. So it'll never not be fun. Just there's shit that happens sometimes. There's just shit that you got to deal with that comes and goes, and the crowds weren't that good, or you didn't really love the city, or, you know, you got to bounce around, or you're out of town 5 weekends in a row, 6 weekends, 7, 8, 9, you know. I'm doing 11 weekends in a row. Jeez. Back and forth to back and forth to back and forth. But I got it because I want to prepare. I want to try to prep up to do a new hour. But it's fun as shit when I'm doing comedy. The other stuff gets tough sometimes. It's fucking annoying. You know, it's hard, but when you're doing comedy, it's like the only thing that matters. Then you're like, ugh, it's all good. This is the most fucking fun, especially if you're with a friend. And you're at the level now where you're doing it with a lot of friends.
Right.
That's the best, man. You know? I think as you get up, it gets a little bit more lonely. You just got to make sure you're still taking someone with you or going with a friend or, you know, that you got people that you can link up with in different cities. That was important to me.
Well, that's what I miss from the open mic world.
Yeah. All your friends, man.
Four guys in a car.
Yep.
Going to do a gig. The guy doesn't know you're bringing an extra guy.
Right.
Find out when you get there.
Yeah.
You know, these are the thing. Like, I don't like doing festivals.
Yeah, I'm not.
I'm not a festival.
I'm not really good at festivals.
But the one I did was a bad experience. The Toyota Festival in New York in 98. Horrible experience. But the Sopranos called me.
That's fucking
awesome.
When
I was on stage, I saw the assistant to the casting director. She just came down. So what didn't I like? There was no money. The Latino Laugh Festival was in San Antonio. Me and Bobby Lee broke. You know, they wouldn't pay us while we were there.
Oh, they didn't give you money?
No. Damn. Per diem, no nothing. They would send you a check. A manager took us out. Carlos Mencia's manager at the time took us out for dinner. That's the only way me and Bobby ate. That's how long I know Bobby Lee. On top of me. You know, both of us, no money, I think a half a joint, you know. And then I did the Seattle Comedy Competition. I did San Francisco. I left the second day.
I did San Francisco, too.
Left.
Slept in my fucking car.
Yeah, Thursday I got in my
Fuck
car.
Fuck that. Oh,
done. I don't need this. Seattle was great. It was a camaraderie.
Yeah.
Six of us got in the car. We stopped and got a 12-pack, you know, even though... You know, you're not doing too good, man. You know, we're your friends. You're not doing too good. You're at 12th place.
Right.
But you're going up before Lee tonight. fucking bury him.
Right. Murder.
Say every dirty joke you can. You're not going nowhere anyway, though.
Right.
You're in no danger. You got two nights left. Right. You're number 12. You got a better chance.
That's how it works.
You got a better chance of pulling the Brody.
Right.
Just go and disrupt Lee's set. Lee don't like dirty in front of him.
Right.
Go there. Here's 200. Go talk about your mother's asshole, got hemorrhoids, and watch Lee's face. That's a contest.
Yeah. Right?
That's camaraderie.
That's fun.
Sunday, there's no show. All of us went to the Seattle Seahawks game. 8 of us. No money. Rolling deep. You know, one of us would get a beer and give sips to each other. 2 of us smoking a joint. You know, that's something I'll never forget in my life.
Yeah.
You know, do you think that'll happen in L.A.? In some circles.
Yeah, a little bit. In some circles. It's just a lot easier when you're young in the game to have those moments.
When you're young in the game and you got those 8 people, what do I tell you every Monday? Did you call Eric? Did you call DiAgostino? Did you call fucking... Those are them. I got nothing for you. I can't take you to the store with me.
Right.
But DiAgostino got a room in El Centro. They give you 3 tacos and $25. What are you looking at me for?
Yeah, that's the
You got to call every Monday. Call. DiAgostino, fucking...
Rodrigo,
the other kid, Johnny Rock, every Monday. Those are your friends. Those are who you live and die with. There's no money. There's no nothing. It's 6 guys that are comedy buddies. So if one of them gets a gig, you all eat.
Yeah.
One of them gets a gig, he's going to go in there and go, hey, do you know who fucking Santino is? No, I don't. He was in I'm Dying Up Here. Get him in here.
Right.
That's what that bond is for.
Right.
Not to hang out with 18 fucking losers. You have to build that 6 or 7 guys. And you live and die with them. Yeah. There's a girl. The girl's hot. She's a whore. You don't fuck her because she's going to fuck the manager for you to come back. You know
right.
what I'm saying? You feed her to the manager. Come here. Like, yeah. The manager, boy, she's hot. Can I come back here and feed you? Yeah. Okay. Listen, you have to take a bullet for the team. You have to blow the manager. You know, that's the fucking 8 years.
Yeah.
So when you come here, you're ready. You have those people.
Right.
You have those guys in different locations. The one guy's at the Improv. Those 6 guys you hung out with, 3 of them quit. One of them got married. The other one went to jail for snorting glue. And the other one's father's dying of cancer, so he's got to take care of him.
Right.
So now out of that 6, you got 3 guys that are moving to L.A. with you. One guy's a Laugh Factory guy. The other one's an Improv guy, and you're a store guy. You're getting spots at the Improv now because you ran with him 10 years ago, and you lived and died for that guy.
Right.
You know, when I lived in Seattle with Josh Wolf, if I had a feature spot, I don't give a fuck who the headliner was. I don't give a fuck who the MC was. Josh is coming with me.
Yeah.
And if I got 200, I threw Josh 50 and bought him lunch and dinner. That's it. It's I'm not making money anyway.
Yeah, what's the difference?
Why not make somebody else's fucking world on the weekend?
Right.
Come on, get in the car.
That's the balance.
That's the whole fucking thing. Wolf was here last week talking about he did warm-up for Prefontaine. They were paying him $800 a day. He brought me down the second week, gave me $100 a day. And I was there just stealing shit. T-shirts. We were going to plan to rob the joint. Like, they raffled the car. It was a lot of extras. So for you to stay all day, they would make you raffle a car. I go, give me the winning number. We'll raffle the car. I win. And then we'll sell the car and split it. I mean, that's how crazy we were. We breathe for one another as open micers.
Yeah.
And that's what that relationship means.
Yeah.
And Joe Rogan can't help you. Dave Chappelle can't help you. Nobody can help you. It's a matter of fact, you don't want anybody to help you because you're having such a great time. That is the best part of this career.
Yeah.
Is that those 3 or 4 years where you don't really care about money. There ain't no money.
No, you're not making any fucking money. Money.
You see? What do you think of my house? Yeah. That's my house.
Yeah.
Look how beautiful. Look at the yard.
Yeah.
Look at the yard. Right there, I throw my roaches over there.
Right.
I got yard. Look at my little refrigerator. That's your thing. You're not going to make no money.
No.
But you're building bonds.
And that pays off.
And that pays off
always.
Bigger than anything in the world.
It's I was talking to somebody, and apparently we talked about open mics, and like there's a clip about it. But I'm going to New York, and this guy that I never met, like there's 2 or 3 people who I went from having 2 spots in 4 days to I think I have like 6 or 7 spots now. I never met them, but they're... And I have to go to like Washington Heights, which is I think like an hour subway ride. Like it's like the guy said it's like the last neighborhood in Manhattan.
Yeah,
and I get 8 minutes,
A-train.
But I'm excited. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
You might get mugged up there too. But that's all part. And that's every fine. I don't want you. You know, you go there with the expectation. It's a garden. There's going to be 35 people. There's going to be 8 people.
Yeah.
You got to assume there's going to be 8 people and some guy's a spitball champion. He's going to throw 1,000 fucking spitballs at you.
Right.
You know, when did you start acting?
2010 or 11.
What made you?
You know, I was like, I only wanted to do stand-up.
Right.
Like, I really wanted to do stand-up.
I just wanted to do stand-up.
Yeah, and an agent had said they wanted me to do commercials. Someone had been like, you should try commercials. You're a redhead. That's great. They need like some people that look different. You should come out. So I tried to do a couple of commercials, and then I got one. I did like a Mike's Hard Lemonade commercial, and it ran like crazy. And it paid me. It paid me. And, you know, the agent was like, why wouldn't you try to go, you want to try to do acting jobs, like real jobs? You want to be an actor? And I was just like, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be good at it, or I don't know. I didn't know, you know? I also didn't know if that was, I was like, that's not viable. You know, as silly as it was, I was like, I'm going to make a living doing comedy, even though that was fucking insane, but I just knew it. I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it. And I went out for a few different things, like a hosting job. I got a hosting job doing something. And I beat out all these guys that like had hosted before for MSN, for Microsoft's homepage. And I did it for like a year and a half, and it was fucking phenomenal. I didn't love it, but it was phenomenal money, and it got me to quit my day job because I was working a day job. I had to fucking work this shitty day job just to get by because I wasn't making money. I was working in the music industry, helping bands get visas to get overseas. It was crazy interesting. It was total on accident. I don't even know how I got it. A friend of a friend maybe set me up, but I would get assigned a band, and I'd have to do all their paperwork to travel the world. And I did Public Enemy, which was amazing because I got to meet him. He came in. These local guys named Dilated People's a hip-hop group. Then I did like, we did Macy Gray and what is their fucking name? What's that? It's a band that they rap and whatever. Anyway, I did a bunch of different bands and I was just doing like paperwork. I was a paper pusher all day long. Paper pusher. And this hosting thing got me to quit. And after the hosting thing, this is actually a wild story. My first job was Punk'd on MTV. I did Punk'd. And what happened was this girl was fucking my roommate. And she was like, oh, you're really funny. I seen you one time go up at the Comedy Store in the belly room. And I was like, oh, thanks. And she goes, you know, I work for this manager and one of his clients is looking for writers for a Comedy Central show. And I was like, I'd love to throw my hat in the ring, you know? And she's like, let me find out. I got an email and they were like, send us all these bits tonight or come in tomorrow morning. I said, I'll write all night. I can't send you. I don't have anything tonight. So I wrote all night long. I went into their office the next day and it turned out to be Ashton Kutcher and his partner, this guy Jason Goldberg, who did Punk together. And they were looking for someone to write this new show for this black guy named Al Shear. And I wrote a bunch of bits and they loved him. And they were like, are you repped? And I was like, no, man. I wrote this on my friend's computer, you know? And they were like, well, we want you to do this job. And I was like, yeah. And they offered me like no money. And I was like, great. I get to write on a thing? Yeah. When do you start? Today. You're here now. So I started working on this thing. And in the middle of it, they told me they were going to bring back Punk'd. And I started to run the show at that point, this pilot. I was doing everything for them, producing it, writing it. And he was like, we're bringing back Punk'd and we want you to write it and be on it. And fucking that was like my first job. And after I did Punk'd, then I got some interest from like CAA was like, do you want to try to actually like act and not do like hidden camera stuff? So I said, yeah, I tried. And then I fucking landed a pilot. I landed this pilot that we got one season out of called Mixology on ABC. It was like the first series I ever did. And it was all because it was probably because I didn't know shit about acting. Because I was just being me and just having a good time. They were like, just be loose and fuck around. He threw the words away. He was like, just do it. And the two guys that wrote it were the guys that wrote The Hangover, John Lucas and Scott Moore. They wrote the original Hangover. And they were like, we just want you to be you and fuck off. We didn't want, you know. So that was my first like entry into the acting world, was doing that show. And then after that, it was like, I fell in love with it, man. I was like, I love doing it. You know, like it'll never trump comedy for me ever. I always want to do stand-up, but man, I fucking, it's fun. When it's fun, it's fucking fun. When you get to work with fun people and the rhythms are right and the scene's moving fast and everyone's popping, acting can be fucking really fun. It never will get the same feeling that comedy does, ever.
I love it.
I love it. I love
it. I love being around the set.
It feels so good,
man. Not continuously.
No.
But it's nice to do like 10 days at Paramount.
Yeah, it's great.
Drive down Melrose, beep at people. How you doing, cocksucker? I'm going to Paramount today. You know what I'm saying?
Feel like a king.
It's great to go to CBS Radford for 2 days.
Yeah.
When they give you an hour, you walk around the lot and breathe.
Go get some food at the commissary.
Yeah. You know, it's just a... And, you know, there's always stigmatas. Like, if you're a comic, you're not supposed to act. Fuck you.
Fuck that.
Fuck you, fuck bitch. That. I saw plenty of fucking comedy. That's the perk.
Yeah.
That's the other perk.
It's a huge
eventually
perk.
You'll do 4 episodes of a show as a garbage man or something like that.
Right.
And they treat you different. You're a stand-up. And I love it. Like I said, I just don't know if I'm ready for it every day, 14 hours a day, 6 days.
So I've done that. I've done it before, and I'm Dying Up Here was 2 seasons of that. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of work, but it was also, you know, working with Jim Carrey, and it was like working under the guise of those guys, and that was impressive to me, being a part of the world of the original history of the Comedy Store, even though we weren't supposed to, you know, we weren't a direct, you know, replica, but it was just, it is a lot of work, and when you're done, it feels really good to get back into the swing of comedy. I never stopped doing comedy when I was shooting that show. If I could get off early enough, I would go do spots. And sometimes Adam would pull me aside and be like, you're tired, bro. Take a couple nights
off.
Yeah,
I don't like that.
Yeah.
When you're here for a long time, you realize, you know, it's the worst thing in the world is having a 10:30
mm-hmm.
and it's 6 o'clock and you're still on the set.
Yeah, it's hard.
And there's a scene left.
Yep.
And they still got to turn around.
Right, and you're like.
And now your leg is tapping. And now you're looking at your clock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great feeling as a comic to go, I shot today and I stopped by the store and did a set. There's no better feeling.
Yeah.
That's like getting a blowjob and getting your ass eaten out with a fucking one of those straws with a long tongue or something. You can't beat it. But there's not a lot of days that you're going to pull it off. Something's going to suffer.
Yeah.
And that's what I didn't like about it. Like when I went to New York for this thing, I had a couple weekends I had to cancel. And you're like, Joey, why'd you cancel? You know why? Because you never know.
Yeah.
It's a move. You get there on Wednesday and the boom breaks. Now they look at you, can you work Friday? And now I got to call St. Louis and tell them I can't go to fucking St. Louis.
Yeah.
I know how this business works.
Yeah.
I know how this, I've been down this road already.
Yeah.
Sometimes we act like a guy, you know, I was here, I did from 98 to 2002, I didn't say no.
Yeah, it's hard to say no.
I didn't know what the word no meant. If you called me for a spot in San Diego at 9, and Lee called me for 1 in Santa Clarita at 7, I'll make it.
I'm doing it.
I'll make it.
Yeah.
If not, we'll figure out how to fucking make it. Because right. I guarantee you're going to call me and go, don't come down because the Blue Jays are playing. So not, and you're like, whew, I knew it.
Right.
So take the gig.
Yeah, I always take the gig.
Take the gig. Burn that bridge when you get to it. It's a $50 gig. It's not like they're there to see you. Those bar gigs, they're not there to see you.
Yeah, you just did them to do them.
Yeah, you just do them to do them. So I would line 8 of them up in a night.
Yeah.
And if you did 7 out of the 8, fuck. Somebody's pissed.
Fuck
you.
Yeah.
Know? Somebody's calling you going, what the fuck, man?
Where are you, man?
We waited. Next time, just move on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You knew I wasn't going to be there. Like,
yeah.
You know, they keep calling you. You know, I'm driving.
Yeah, get the fuck over.
What are you calling for?
Right.
And that's why you always have to leave. Like, you can't, like, if I know I'm doing something, I won't call the store.
Yeah, no, I've learned. I've learned my lesson.
I won't call the improv because then you're rushing and you get there. Now you got to follow. Or, you know, you were supposed to go up at 10:15. Now you still got to go down and it's 11:30.
Yeah.
So you're like, what?
And I don't want to do that to everybody. Bump everyone and fuck up the lineup. That's what I don't like to do. I don't want to fuck it all up.
It's crazy. When I'm Dying Up Here came out, I heard what it was about, but I was so busy in my own world, I never got to watch it.
Yeah.
When I got the call to be on it, what do you call that when you watch 15 episodes in 2 days?
Binge, yeah. I binge watched it.
And I fell in love with it.
Yeah.
Like, out of all this, listen, we all want to be a fan of a stand-up show. But it's got to take us somewhere where it really relates. You know, like, and that, it related to me. Like, I was happy to be a part of that.
I was happy that when they said that you were coming on.
Yeah, I was happy. I was happy. Everything about it. when I got there, I thought it was just another stand-up show. It was a great show, you know. It wasn't 15 years ago.
No.
If it was 15 years ago, we would have had that. That show would have been in its fourth season now.
Yeah.
Because they give you time to play with. Today, they don't give you time to nothing.
You got nothing.
You got two episodes to make it work. And even if you pick up the last six, they're like, eh. But the first two episodes were just not clicking.
Yeah.
You know, so.
When I got the phone call that we did a second season, I remember when they said we were going to do a second season, I was up in Mammoth in the summertime for my lady's birthday. And I was surprised as shit. I had no cell phone service, so I left my phone. And I got back to the hotel and my phone had like 1,000 missed calls. And I was like, what the fuck? My agents and managers and all these people, cast members. And I'm like, Jesus, I pick it up. And then when I found out I got a second thing, I was blown away. Because it didn't get received the same way. People didn't hold on to the show. It was a tough show to make. It was a tough show to talk about. It was pretty sad. It was dreary. It was negative at a lot of times, you know? Didn't have the heart. The thing that Jay Leno, I think, said in an interview, or Letterman. Now maybe Leno said in an interview that the one thing about the show that he was bummed about was it didn't show how much fun we had in the 70s. He's like, we had way more fun than that. I think that was our biggest fault, was we didn't show enough fun. Enough really having a good fucking time. Because comics have fucking, how much fun do you have when you're fucking around with your, I mean, like, this is fucking, we have so much fucking fun that the show sometimes just didn't show enough fun. It was just too dark.
Now, I always wanted to ask you, because I'm this stupid.
Yeah.
Who was the guy that opened the comedy club that was giving away ribs and shrimp? Who was that supposed to be at that time?
Well, her competition was, because, you know, the original club, the Westwood Club.
Right.
There was another guy trying to open up a club right around the corner from her. And I don't remember who it was. I don't remember, but there was a competition of another club, of someone giving free food. Yeah, what was his name? I don't even remember his name on the fucking show. But right, he was giving away food. But there was another club like that in Westwood that a guy was trying to open up to boot out the Comedy Store. Because people don't know, the original store was, I mean, Westwood was where the store was. And then it came to Sunset. And I don't remember when. But yeah, she had the club in Westwood. And her husband had owned the Comedy Store. She opened up Westwood and then she moved it to Sunset. That's how it happened.
Zeros, right.
But someone was trying to take her down. There was another guy trying to open up another club around the corner. But Mitzi faced, I mean, so much competition of people trying to, like, because there was a lot of, like, beatnik shows. They told us there was a bunch of other fucking roundabout shows trying to, like, take down a club because a club had no business there. It was kind of like, it's never going to fucking work. Like, get the fuck out of here with that. But when she stuck to it and when she took over Sunset, it was over. She revolutionized it, man. I mean, it was just like, that was the beginning of everything.
What was the auditioning process like for that movie? Because one of the kids in The Sopranos said he auditioned for it.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Yeah, they came out and saw me do stand-up first. They saw me and Eric Griffin together do stand-up. And we were at the store first, and Jim came to the store. And then they saw me again at, like, the Improv, maybe? They saw me twice do stand-up. And then they called me in to go just for the producers and all that stuff. And I did it. And then I got a phone call and they were like, all right, we're going to show you the network tomorrow. So you got to come in, do the same thing. And I remember walking in the room and I've been accustomed to doing enough that I'm just don't get nervous anymore, really. I mean, I just get excited or I just get like anxious and happy that I'm like, all right, I got to fucking kill this. I got to, you know, focus. And I walked in the room and Eric Griffin's fucking ass was sitting in the chair. And as soon as I walked in, he goes, this motherfucker. And I started laughing and we were hugging and having a good time. Everybody else was like, you know, like making him more nervous because we knew each other. And I could just feel that I was like, we're both going to get this fucking gig. Like, I just was like, I just knew. I've known a few times that I was going to get the gig. And I knew that time I was going to get the gig. I could just feel it in my bones, man.
Yeah, because I met an actor and he said that he was up for one of the roles.
Yeah.
So what he did was he went and did stand-up one night. And he goes, when I got off stage, I called my agent the next day and I told him I didn't want no part of that show.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because, listen.
It was too real for
them. They had to learn to do stand-up. Half of the people on a show had to learn to do stand-up, and that was really fucking hard. What was harder, in my opinion, was us pretending that were new stand-ups in the 70s. That shit was wild, man. Like, we had jokes that I would never tell now because it's 1974, but also you have to kind of pretend like you're very new to the game because none of us were pros yet, you know? When Pryor came on the show, when this guy that played Richard Pryor, he was supposed to be the only pro. I mean, we were all amateurs trying to get spots on Carson, you know? So you kind of had to act like you were a 3 or 4 year comic. So it was kind of hard to like change the way that you approach the stage because you didn't want to have all this confidence and vigor because then it would have been obvious that you were already a pro. But the idea was these guys aren't pros. I mean, none of those guys were pros, you know? They're, except for the top names. But we were supposed to be Joe Schmo, who's trying to, you know, who's passed at the store, but who's not a pro yet.
Right, you're developing.
Yeah, you're in her system.
The guy that killed himself?
Well, that's based on a real guy. They did it differently. On our show, he got hit by a bus, but in real life, he jumped off the roof it's now called the Andes. It's called the Hyatt.
Now, was it after the Tonight Show or after Mitzi turned him down?
No, on the show, it was after he did the Tonight Show, but in real life, it was after he didn't get passed. He worked at the store. His name was Steve Lubetkin. That was his name. Jumped off the roof of that hotel next to the store, the Hyatt, and he landed on the fucking parking garage, the ramp. But he had a note in his pocket that said, my name's Steve Lubetkin, and I used to work at the Comedy Store. It said it in his jacket pocket. And that was because of the strike. There was a comic strike, and that's what that was all about. It was like this kid was just, you know, he was depressed and not all there, and he just knew he was never going to get past the strike. He just thought the strike drowned a lot of those guys. You know, the guys that made enough money, they could survive the strike. You know, that is rumored to be where Letterman and Leno's split happened. Whether or not that's true, I don't know, but that's...
Well, Leno went to the store. Leno went to the Improv.
Well, Leno crossed the picket line and performed for her.
Right.
Yeah, and Letterman refused to. And that was kind of the beginning of the end, apparently. That and also the trading off guest hosting the Tonight Show, and I think they didn't like that each other because they were both competing for the same job that Leno ended up getting. You know, Leno got the fucking Tonight Show after they both guest hosted, and I think Letterman wanted it.
But here's the big thing. You know who would have got that job if he didn't kill himself? Freddie Prinze,
yeah.
Freddie Prinze is going to be the host of the fucking Tonight Show, dog. That motherfucker even looked good. He was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, if you listen to Eddie, what's his first name? Freddie Prinze.
Yeah, Freddie.
If you listen to Freddie live from Chicago, there's a CD. Me and Rogan bought it one time. We had to throw it out the window.
It's terrible.
Stand up in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Was really, you could see where, and it's not that it progressed, or I don't know if it was the subject matter, because Pryor had some brilliant albums in the fucking 70s. That was his, you know, those Bicentennial Nigger and the one before that, those were just masterpieces.
But you know why I think that was? Because they were about him. Pryor did a lot of stuff about Pryor. A lot of other guys did a lot of stuff about what's happening in the world, right. And what's happening in the world nothing is evergreen. Right? Like nothing in comedy politically is evergreen. Jokes that were funny 20 years ago about what's happening, probably not that fucking funny anymore because it's not happening. We've moved so much forward. You know what I mean? So when your material is about you, like Pryor did it so well, it lives forever because it's so personal, you know? Talk about your mom smoking crack and sucking cock in front of you when you're 9, you know? You know what I mean? How does that... That's powerful now. I just say that now, and people go, dude, fuck. That's an image. I'm not talking about Bob Dole. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You talk about stuff that's of the time, and it's probably not going to last. The chances are it won't last because we keep progressing societally so much. Trump jokes? Everyone's doing Trump shit now? In 20 years, it'll be annoying.
I don't like topical material.
Well, because it doesn't hold. It's hard to hold on to. Yeah.
3 weeks.
And then it goes away.
If I got a topical joke now, I just put it on Twitter.
Yeah, throw it up online.
Just save it for Twitter because you're not going to get nowhere with it. At least get a laugh on Twitter for the moment.
Right. And unless you're putting out specials every fucking 9 months like Louis did and all those guys that put out specials year after year after year. Yeah, you could probably be topical because your shit's happening right now. Chappelle did a ton of topical stuff in his last two specials because he was putting them out right away. Boom, boom. You know what I mean? It was like two specials right in a fucking row. But, you know, I think that's a hard thing to do. I think comedy in the 70s, you know, a lot of that old stuff that was of the times, yeah, it wasn't fucking good. Like, it just, it doesn't hold up. You know what I mean? But guys like, you know, I think people revere guys like Hicks got a lot of love because he talked about what was going on, but from such an angry, honest standpoint that he was on this island alone a lot. I think he liked to just be on this island alone. That's who I'm supposed to play on the show. And I think that's why he lasted posthumously, you know? He was just so fucking raw and just honest about what was happening, and his spin wasn't cheeky or cute. It was sometimes it was shitty and dirty and not even that funny, you know? He just had an angle and he stuck to it. He just kept going.
When you got into comedy, who did you look at as?
I mean, when I was a kid, I thought, Eddie Murphy, like everyone says, was mesmerizing.
Delirious.
It was mesmerizing.
Delirious. And that
I thought that was the craziest shit I'd ever seen in my life.
Delirious was too much.
Yeah. It was overwhelming. It made me feel like, it also made me feel like I'm probably not funny. I remember seeing it and being like, there's no fucking way I'll ever be funny. That's funny. That's a new level of funny. I might be ha-ha funny.
Funny ha-ha.
Yeah. This motherfucker is, that's comedy. And then as I started to dive into like becoming a big fan of comedy, you know, I liked Carlin a little bit, but the guys that I was falling in love with style-wise that I was like obsessed with when I was young was like, you know, I mean, I love Geraldo. He was somebody
I loved him.
I thought he was so cool.
His style was great.
So unique and his own shit. I loved Hedberg because I was fascinated by one-liner guys. And then, you know, I gravitated to like, then I started to change my taste and I gravitated to guys more like Burr. Burr has always been kind of the hero of comedy to me. I'm like, that's the guy. He to me is the guy, you know? I always loved Chappelle. I liked Rock. But even before Bill was famous to the country, comics always knew him.
He's
been doing comedy for so long. Now everybody knows Bill. I go anywhere and somebody knows Bill Burr. But you could ask someone 15 years ago, those numbers were much different. You know, I mean, fucking Rogan was just talking to me the other day about, he was like, you know, I only started doing theaters like, I don't know, what did he say, 5-6 years ago he stopped doing clubs? I was like, wow, that's such a short, like I thought it was longer. He's like, no. And now he's doing fucking arenas like that. I mean, the way your brain works of how long someone's been big in comedy, it's hard to tell. You know what I mean? Unless you're them, it's from an outside perspective. I thought Joe's been doing big shit for so long just because it feels that way.
No, he's like a very old school guy.
So yeah.
He liked the control of it. It's weird that he's doing arenas because I know that. But you, I don't know how many theaters I've done, not on my own, but with other people. And I'm just getting the hang of them now.
They're tough, right?
It's a different animal.
Different beast, man.
It's a different animal.
Yeah.
But once you get the hang of them, you're like, okay, I could do this. You know, when you think of Sebastian being at the Garden, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I still think that.
But when you work yourself up to that, you'll see it. It's nothing.
Yeah.
You know, to guys like me and you that have never gone out in front of 18,000 people at one shot and learned to control 18,000 people and see how long it takes them to hear your joke and how long it takes for you to get the laughter back.
Right.
It's a bigger venue, you know.
I'm learning that.
It's not a smaller room where it's
bounce, 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 bounce.
The original room, you can't jump on them like that. You lose them.
Right.
You lose them unless the sound system is
fucking.
Which I got to tell you, compared to 10 years ago, yeah, you'll hear somebody burp now. Hear their fucking intestines, you know.
Right, right.
We have that technology.
Yeah.
You know, people said that went to see Sebastian. Yeah, you watched them, but you also watched the monitor.
Yeah, that's
you
the thing.
Yeah. What did you do if you had $50 tickets? You watched the monitor, but the sound was great. But as a comic, you think of being in that arena.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the Garden. I'm saying that arena of 15,000 plus people in a room. It's a lot of fucking people.
Oh, yeah. We did...
A lot of people to control. You did what?
13,000 in San Diego, me and
one show.
On 13, 420.
Or two shows.
One show. 13,000.
13,000
tickets. Yeah, in San Diego. In the round. And then 2 weeks ago, we did Chicago, and that was 9,000.
It's one show.
One
so
show.
So sat 9,000.
9,000.
I still remember going to the Vic with him.
Yeah.
And then barely selling out the Vic.
Yeah.
Maybe 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, and then look at that. And then last year just 1 year ago, we did Chicago Theater, two shows. Yeah. Sold the fuck out. That's those it. Are 4,200 a piece or something like that?
Chicago Theater is 42 or 32?
Maybe 32.
32.
And man, it going from that to go back the next year to play the UIC Pavilion to do 9,000 was fucking, it just, arenas feel so different. I don't know how to say it, but like clubs to theaters, it's different, but it's still intimate in a way. Theater, but arenas have no intimacy, none. You can't really connect with the front rows. Theaters, you still can kind of connect with this young, the chunk of people in the orchestra rows. But arenas, the stage is so fucking big. I mean, the stage is 30 feet by 20 feet. It's fucking huge.
That's huge.
It's fucking huge.
That's huge.
I mean, what's the store? The store, the original room stage might be...
4 feet by eight.
Yeah, man. It's fucking...
4 by 8.
There's nothing there.
It's a piece of plywood.
Right,
with carpet
it's right there. and even the main room stage is not even that big. It can't be that much bigger. It's just higher up with a bigger room.
What was the size of the stage? 30 feet?
30 by feet by 20 feet, something.
Jesus, like you got to run back and forth.
Yeah, it's
by
absurd.
The time you get on stage... How's the education of Joe Rogan been?
Phenomenal.
It's an education and a half.
Phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's watching Joe, being friends with Joe and watching Joe grow himself in stand-up to get to these next levels and me being there to watch it. It's, you know, I don't know how to, I can't really put it in words. It's beautiful. It's beautiful to watch somebody that I like as a human and as a comedian grow to this next level. I'm physically watching it with my own eyes. I mean, he's never done arenas before. I'm watching him do them now with me. And I texted him today because they just released tickets for him and Chappelle are doing Tacoma, the Tacoma Dome. I think it's like 20. I have no fucking idea. I think it seats 18,000 or some shit like that. And I texted him. I said, dude, what the fuck? And he goes, right? Isn't this fucking wild? I was like, that's him and Chappelle doing an arena at a scale that I don't think comedy's been this way, and not since I've been in the game. I've
not
never
since the late 90s.
Yeah.
You know, you got to remember one thing. Growing old sucks.
Yeah.
Really does.
Sure.
Suck. You're back. You go to bed earlier. You know, your dick don't get hard like it used to.
Yours does.
Mine does. Yeah. Thank God.
Yeah.
You know. But I will tell you something. What the best thing about getting old is seeing people's growth.
Yeah.
It keeps you alive. Here, I'm going to blow your mind. First time I went out on the road with Joe, he was a $3,000 a week comic, and he couldn't sell out 7 shows at the Improv in Miami.
Right.
Sold out the weekend.
Right.
But Thursday was Men's and Men's. Wednesday was Men's and Men's. So that's been a growth of 21 years.
Yeah.
If you're not into this for 21 years, it's not going to work. If you're not all in with both your guns, feet, I don't care what you don't like. Sorry. Doesn't really matter. I'm sure along the way, Joe didn't like 1,000 things either.
Right.
But I want you to fathom that around your head. He was when he was on news, ask him. When he was on news radio, one of the first gigs he did was Caroline's, and he lost money on the gig because the plane ticket was more than what he got paid.
Right, right.
Plane ticket was more
than they paid him.
Than what he got. Now, this is at the 98. He had been doing comedy maybe 12 years.
Yeah.
So if you're willing to take a loss in comedy your 12th year, what are you talking about?
Yeah, you must really fucking care.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's wild.
So that's what, you know, watching him doing what he's doing, him watching us, you know, me and Ari were his bag handlers.
Yeah.
And Dustin, you know, it was me, Ari, him, and Red Band. Red Band was the camera tech. Duncan, me, and Ari. 3 guys in front of him doing 10 apiece.
It's wild.
That's cool. And people used to tell him, you shouldn't bring Diaz and Ari, they're losers. And he used to go, wait. Wait.
Just fucking wait.
Just fucking wait. I see it. You guys don't see it because all you're looking at are ticket sales.
Right.
But I see it from the comedy. They're killing at the Comedy Store. Shut the fuck up. And that was it. The education of Joe Rogan. I think 40% of when I leave on Thursday and come back on Sunday is based on Joe Rogan, how he taught me to live on the road, act. You know, I was telling somebody here the first time he called me and said, let's go work out. I'm like, are you fucking retarded? We're on vacation.
Yeah.
Who works out on vacation?
Yeah.
Work out. Go fuck yourself. Work out. You'd see him an hour later, all sweaty, telling you how good he feels. Yeah, I feel better. I've been over here watching Law and Order, smoking reef, eating a sausage sub from the pizza place, and you're the other sweating like a pig. Guess what? I fucking work out on the road now. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Now you got to get on stage. Your legs got to be strong. You know, all those little things I learned from Joe. Joe is an educator. You know, this whole thing is a journey full education.
Yes.
That's all this is. That's all. And at the end of it all, you'll go, Jesus Christ, I'm really fucking happy I did that. And I'm happy I didn't take that construction job my uncle had. I would have never been a carpenter.
True.
You know, and I would have still been freezing my ass off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing people have to look at. You have to look at the time. Like I said it before, put your head down, put a fireman's hat on. You know that shit, the way it's designed so shit falls off it?
Right.
That's what being a stand-up is. As a matter of fact, that's what life is. Is you taking hits and keep going forward.
Yeah.
Your cat dies. Your hours get cut. You know what I'm saying? You didn't get the promotion you wanted. What are you going to do? Fucking put a note on your jacket and jump off a bridge every time that happens? You'll be out of fucking lives.
Right.
You know. So that's all this is.
Take the hit.
But the fucking Rogan education was the one that really, he hit the last nail of the work ethic, how everything had to go for me. I knew what I had to do. He turned the last screw, and I was off and running after that.
Yeah.
And Ari was off and running after that. He just had certain principles. You know, Rogan's a straight, decent guy, very generous. I'm a criminal. We have nothing in common.
Right.
We only have one thing in common, Joe and I, that we, how holy we hold the religion of comedy.
Yeah.
How sacred we hold the religion of comedy. I don't give a fuck about anything, my friend. I really don't. I give a fuck about that little girl. I give a fuck about my wife, but if she wants to go, she gotta go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many things in this life that are replaceable. Comedy is never gonna be replaceable in my life or your life.
No.
It's never gonna be replaceable. I never wanted it to be replaceable. I could care less.
Yeah, all the other shit sucks.
A baseball game or a basketball. When you fall in love with comedy, nothing else matters.
Yeah.
There's only one thing that matters. The pussy you're going to get afterward and the joint you're going to smoke before. Where can people find you, brother?
Go to andrewsantino.com for tour dates. I'm going to San Diego this weekend, so come out and see me in La Jolla.
Where are you at in San Diego?
Comedy Store.
Oh, that's a good one.
Love it, man. Tickets are fucking thinning out. They're almost selling out already.
Good
it's,
for you, man.
Dude, that's one of my favorite fucking venues on
How
earth.
How can it not be?
Oh, that air. By the way, if you're ever down there, there's a little place called El Pescador, which is the fish market. It used to be on the other side of La Jolla in a little shack. Now they got a. Now it's big, but it's all fresh cut,
How
fresh
far
cooked.
From the club?
Throw a baseball down the street, right down the street.
No shit.
Yeah, it's brand new building. They used to be in a little shit shack. Now it's there, but. They catch it, cook it there that day. So if you ever get a chance, go El Pescador. I prop them up every time because every time I go, if you like seafood, fuck me, man. So when they're out, they're out. It's not like, yeah, we got some more in the back. It's like, that's what they got. It's there. They'll cook it right there that day. They catch it, clean it, cut it, cook it that day. And if they're out, they're out. It's not like, you got some more halibut in the freezer? Like they got what's there and that's it. And it's some of the best fucking seafood I've ever had in my life. Every time I go, I eat there three meals a day, man. Cause up here it's like we got sushi in LA, but there's not a lot of good seafood joints in LA.
What's
for some
breakfast?
Reason.
What do you eat for breakfast there?
I like to get tuna sashimi, you know, with chips, you know, or I get tacos. I like tacos in the morning.
Breakfast tacos?
Fish tacos. Hell yeah. Breakfast
Look
fish tacos. Yeah. I love that shit.
You're a bad motherfucker.
I love that shit, dude. We don't get that up here like that. I mean, you can get that stuff. You can get it at Mexican restaurants up here, but there's not a lot of like fisheries and eateries like they have like how the East Coast does. They don't do that up here in LA unless you're by right by the water. I don't live anywhere near the fucking water. But this is that when I go down there, that's El Pascador's my fucking spot. So come out and see me in La Jolla. Go to AndrewSantino.com for tickets, and then Cheeto Santino on Twitter and Instagram and all that jazz.
Where'd Cheeto come from?
I was playing basketball in East LA. I told this story on fucking on TV one time. I was playing basketball when I first moved here. I was playing basketball in East LA with these guys from Boyle Heights, and all these Mexican dudes, and they were making fun of my legs because I have orange leg hair. And he kept being like, man, you got fucking like orange leg hair, dog. And I was like, yeah. And this dude, we were drinking at the bar afterwards. He's like, it's fucking gross, motherfucker. That looks like if you ate a bag of Cheetos and then you wiped the finger dust all over your motherfucking legs, player. And they all lost it. Everyone was like, Cheeto leg, motherfucker. So they kept calling me Cheeto, and it stuck. Like, it was such a term of endearment that was shitting on me. I loved it. I was like, that's so fucking funny. So they would call me Cheeto, Cheeto, Cheeto. And then when I signed up for Twitter and all that shit, I was like, what's my fucking name going to be? Andrew Santino on here. It's like something more fun. And Cheeto Santino, it's just catchy.
A couple weeks ago, I brought you up and I said, Mr. Santino?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I wanted to call you Cheeto, but I'm like, I'm not sure.
You could. Fuck, like, I love that shit.
I better make sure. Because I didn't know who the fuck Cheeto Santino was. I knew it was you.
Yeah.
But also on stage, you got a mind fart.
What do you call
those things?
A brain fart. Yeah.
And you like, who's coming up?
Yeah.
Like, the worst is Fahim Amor.
You see
how I say his name?
Yeah, Fahim.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Get me on stage. Who's up next? Fahim Amor. Coming to the stage. Habib. I can't say it. Because
Habib.
Yeah, I love the kid. Habib. And I feel so fucking bad.
Every time
I got to bring him up, who's up next? Fahim Amor. Oh, you're going to love this guy, Comedy Central. Coming to the stage. Habib Mama. And as I'm walking, I'm like, dog, I'm fucking sorry. And you, a couple weeks ago, I was up there. Having a great time. All of a sudden, who's next? Michael's in there. Whatever, Andrew Santino. Okay. And I'm like, is it Andrew? Oh, no, he said Santino.
Yeah, he just said Santino. They usually just call out Santino. So I go,
do I use Cheeto? Do I use Andrew? What the fuck do I use?
Right. When your brain gets stuck in those fucking modes. People yell to me Cheeto all the time. I get on stage now, people yell, Cheeto! I don't know why people, it's stuck for some reason. People love it. People on the street yell Cheeto to me all the fucking
time. If they don't call you a nickname, they don't like you.
I know, that's true. I'll take it. I don't give a fuck. I like it. Cheeto!
So where can they find you?
AndrewSantino.com.
AndrewSantino.com. Go there, look at numbers, look at the dates, and he's a great young man. He's making things happen. Support, bitches. Don't forget, I will be at the Funny Bone in Columbus the 29th and 30th, and then I will be at the Rec Room in Orange County on July 5th. One show, 7 to 8 o'clock. You got to go on the website. It's going to be easy. After you fucking lit firecrackers and you ran from the Chinese people, you come and hang out with Uncle Joe. And I think Saturday night, Eddie Bravo's down there with Sam Tripoli. How you like me now, bitch? But before we go, we always got to talk to you about a few things. Number one, listen, why walk around with that stinky, filthy asshole? And why are you still using fucking toilet paper? If you got shit on your leg, would you wipe it off with paper? No. You'd wipe it off with paper and a little bit of water to remove it, and then you'd sanitize your leg with fucking one of those Ajax strips or whatever the fuck. Things develop in your asshole. Things develop. Germs, odors, stenches. You got to stay on top of this thing. Ever since I got my fucking Hello Tushy portable bidet, my life has changed. My personality has changed. I've been more patient. I've been more understanding. Why? Because my asshole is clean and I'm confident. If I was single and some chick said, I want to eat your asshole, I'd give her a bib and tell her, go ahead, my asshole is tip-top magoo. It may have a little wang up there from the 56 years, but there ain't no fucking shit in there. You understand me? And they got a ton of stuff. Go to HelloTushy.com right now. They got bamboo towels. They got different colors to match your bathroom. It comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. And like I told you before, why kill a tree when you can wipe your ass with nice water? And I'm not talking about toilet water that's got germs on it, recycled water. This is water that comes out from the same thing as your drinking water. Why? It's 7 minutes to install a tushy. That's it. Listen, I've been pushing these people for years. Why? Because it's a good, dependable product. Lee, do you still have your tushy?
Absolutely.
How many years has it been?
3 or 4, I think.
How many shits have you taken?
Thousands.
Okay.
Hundreds of thousands.
Listen to me. Hello Tushy is the way to go. Go to HelloTushy.com right now and take a look at the different colors, the different prices. But they start at $69, and they don't get no better than that. I'm sick and tired of you having a stinky fucking asshole. And in the daytime, you got nothing to do. You can dip your nutsack in there and let the bidet water hit your nutsack, and it's like fucking refreshing. You understand me? So ladies, if your pussy stinks, Hello Tushy's there to help you too. You push that little bat into the water and put some fucking staminka in there, and you're fucking tip-top magoo. You go on that date, especially in the humid states. Your nuts start stinking up a storm. Your asshole melts. You don't need it. Go to HelloTushy.com right now and press in.
Church.
Bam! And get 20% off delivered to your fucking house. You can have it installed between 7 minutes. How many tools it take you?
None.
None. This is what I'm saying. You could be a complete fucking moron and still install the Tushy bidet. You don't need a plumber. You don't need your mother to help you, your fucking father-in-law. Fuck that motherfucker. Go to HelloTushy.com right now and get your portable bidet, all right? Number two, Onnit.com. I love Onnit. I've been working with Onnit for 7 fucking years now. I love everything they got. From the Shroom Tech Sport, the Shroom Tech Immune, you don't get sick. The Shroom Tech Sport gives you more oxygen to your lungs. The Alpha Brain, the protein powder, the fucking sausages, the CMT oil. You cannot lose with Onnit. Go to Onnit.com right now and press in.
Church.
Bam! 10% off delivered right to the fucking crib. You don't got to leave your house. That's how good Onnit is. And I told you, Alpha Brain, they got a money-back guarantee and they don't want the product back. Who else does that? That's a company that stands behind a product. That's a company that you could trust. Go to Onnit.com right now and press in.
Church.
Boom! 10% off delivered right to the fucking crib. I want to thank my man, Andrew Cheeto Santino. I want to thank the Christ Killer. But I want to thank you guys for always having my back and supporting the podcast. That's it and that's that. See you motherfuckers next week, Columbus, Ohio. It's myself and Steve Simone. We're going to rip that fucking town up. Stay, and we're going to Stout to work out. I love my girl over at Stout. Crew Hope is the fucking, the real deal. Iggy teaches on Saturdays. It's a fucking party. Sidekicks for Jesus. I love you, motherfuckers. See you on Thursday. Ready to rock. Tip Top Magoo. Don't forget, Lee Sciatis at Skank Festival Friday and Saturday. 12 o'clock show on Saturday. 4 o'clock show on Friday. Go support. It's up in the cave up there in fucking, where is it?
It's in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Bazaar.
There you go, cocksucker. Stay black. I love you. Kick this motherfucking Muley.